Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Well, hello and welcome. You're listening to Chef Story, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton. And today we're broadcasting from the International Culinary Center in Soho, New York City. And that's the last time you're going to feel like you're in Soho, New York City. Because today I have two real Texans, Jonathan and Justin Fox, who are known for barbecue, Texan barbecue, but in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're very lucky because they were up here last night cooking at the Beard House. And I'm not a recent fan of barbecue, but I was born in Brooklyn. And when I grew up, I think barbecue was like a grill to me. I didn't understand it was a whole cult. And now, don't know if you guys know, but I'm the president of the U.S. Pavilion in Milan for the World's Fair there. And one big thing, one whole exhibit is about barbecue. And in our food trucks, we are serving smoked brisket and pulled pork. So I have become a real fan and aficionado of barbecue. So I'm totally excited you're here. So Justin and Jonathan, let me tell you a little bit about them. They are known as the Fox Brothers Barbecue, and they have won considerable awards. And they hail from Texas, but San Antonio, I believe. But they moved to Atlanta, and they have been picked by ABC News as 10 of the most popular barbecue joints. HuffPost called them a top-rated barbecue restaurant in America. And USA Today Travel named them one of the top 10 barbecue in Atlanta. So now we're going to get all the secrets, right? We're going to get all the secrets. Welcome, Jonathan, Justin. How you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
It's doing good today.
You know, usually I only have one chef, and I ask them, you know, you have to tell me about your background. But I think this might be a little easier because you're identical twins. And so when I ask that, it's not like to. But it's going to be, I've never.
Okay.
So let me tell you. Let me ask you, how long have you been living in Atlanta?
Well, I guess it's coming on 10 years now, I want to say. Longer than that. I moved to Atlanta in 2000. So that's 15 years.
And yeah.
It's been a while.
So do you feel Texan or do you feel Georgian?
Always. I mean, I love the South and I love Texas, but I love living in Atlanta. We have four seasons there. Texas is either on or off. And when it's on, it's not fun. So it gets hot there.
Yeah.
And it's snowed more in Texas since I've lived in Atlanta. Than it has, so I enjoy the four seasons. It makes good barbecue weather.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. So tell me, what was your growing up in San Antonio? Did you have a typical, you know, cowboy western childhood?
Well, we kind of moved all over. We were born in San Antonio. We lived in Houston. We finished up in Fort Worth. So we kind of run the gamut of living in and around Texas. So They call Fort Worth, it's where the West begins. I think you can pretty much see to El Paso from the edge of Fort Worth. So, I mean, it's just the end of civilization. So, it's on the it's cattle town. It was on a drive up to Kansas City for cattle, and so there's big stockyards there. So, it's Fort Worth has a real Texas feeling to it compared to Houston.
So did you grow up in the city? Did you grow up in the suburbs?
Kind of in the Fort Worth is not that big, so we're pretty much in the city. Houston, we grew up in the suburbs.
So, well, what were your childhoods like? Were you into food when you were little? Were you into sports? What were you guys like when you were 8 years old?
You know, typical kids. I think, you know, riding bikes through the neighborhood and, you know, sometimes coming home with broken bones and such like that. But, you know, we are part of a big family. You know, we are the Fox brothers and we're twins, but there's actually six of us total, all boys. But three of them are stepbrothers, but we've been brothers long enough that we're...
Since like the third grade.
Yeah, we're pretty much we're brothers. But so
it's always, you know, in a working family, you know, you come home from school, you're hungry, your parents are working, so, you know, it's just you start, I can, you know, think back to, you know, we're kind of fending for ourselves and cooking and when we were early on, my parents got divorced and my dad, we were living with him and he was obviously not a cook. So you're forced to kind of, you know, fend for yourself and create something. So I think, you know, started cooking then and just always found a passion for it.
What were your home meals like?
Well, I think when we were living with our dad, his meal of choice was olive loaf. So
olive loaf.
Yeah. So if you wanted to eat something other than olive loaf, you had to kind of learn.
Oh, that's the deli meat.
Yeah.
I'm not talking. You know, I just came from Italy. I was thinking a loaf of bread with olive.
Kind of like mortadella, but not as good. But basically, just bologna with olives in it.
Yeah.
And if you didn't want to eat olive loaf, you had to kind of learn and fend for yourself. So
where were you in the pecking order of brothers?
With the youngest.
I am technically the youngest one in the family.
I'm 3 minutes older than him.
It was the best 3 minutes of my life.
So how did you get it? Well, let's get back to, so when you were young, when you were growing up, did you say, I want to be a pit master? Or where was your head? What did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
A lot of people ask us, you know, like, does your family cook barbecue? Do you have barbecue heritage? And it's like, no, I didn't really start cooking barbecue until I moved to Atlanta. I never envisioned cooking barbecue. I remember once in high school trying to cook ribs on a friend's parents' smoker, and we didn't smoke them, we burned them. And so
thought just because they were black that they were done. They were
pretty
black on the outside, but red on the inside. So,
you know, when we moved to Atlanta, we always enjoyed cooking. I think whenever my parents went out of town in high school, instead of having like keg parties and stuff like that, I'd invite my friends over for dinner and start cooking because I got to get in the kitchen and take it over and do whatever I wanted. So cooking was always fun. And when I moved to Atlanta, I remember, like, I was like, you know, I would just want to have friends over and cook for them, and even though I only knew one person there. So I was just like, how am I, you know, I just got to get in there and do it. And at the time, I was doing web work, like graphic design and web design. When I took my first job in Atlanta, I had freelance work or anything like that. So the first thing I did, my roommate was a friend of mine that I grew up with in Texas. He was a bartender at this restaurant, and I made this cake and he took it some into work and the manager loved it. And next thing you know, I'm making cakes for this restaurant. And I was like, well, I can't do web work. Then I'll start doing this. So
what kind of cake was it?
It was like this angel. It was this layered cake. It was angel food and like this chocolate ganache and devil's food.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And
they use words like ganache in Texas.
Oh yeah. I mean, we cooked at the Beard House last night. So
no. I didn't mean it from that way. But this is pre you're the Beardmasters.
Coming
from Texas. And
you know, I think about the time.
That sounds pretty sophisticated. That cake.
I think about the time, you know, when he was saying that our parents would go out of town and we'd invite our friends over for dinner. It was about the time that the Food Network was getting going. So you know, you're watching shows with, like, you know, Grilling and Chilling with Bobby Flay. You know, the old Food Network
back
shows.
When they had shows that taught you how to cook.
Yeah,
you know?
And Emeril Lagasse. You know, it's like you really learned a lot just by watching those shows. And I mean, we were pretty much, you know, some people are religious about watching ESPN and sports. We were religious about watching.
And that was early on in the network's career. And I think one of the cool things is Alton Brown had a show that actually, you know, he teaches techniques and things like that on his show. And so it's cool now because he lives in Atlanta.
Is he really?
Yeah, and he comes into the restaurant and he recommends it to people. And he's been, you know, a good supporter online and recommends us to people. So it's kind of cool.
So when was the very first time you touched a grill?
Well, in Atlanta or in general?
In general.
You know, probably... I cooked in a for I waited tables in the majority of the time that I spent working in restaurants. There was a short period of about a year that I worked at this French restaurant in Fort Worth, and the chef took me on. I really had no formal training or anything like that, and I worked the grill. That's probably, I'm sure, just hanging out and cooking, you know, buddies and stuff like that. High school.
Yeah, high school, middle school, late middle school, early high school, somewhere around there.
When you're trusted to cook with fire.
Yeah.
As a non-adult.
Right. So, I think you're going to have to educate me, because I don't know much about barbecue. And I just know it's absolutely delicious, and it has a lot to do with sauces. Mm-hmm. Has a lot to do with wood, and has a lot to do, there's nuance, and quite frankly, when we were getting ready for the expo in the American Pavilion, we were trying to find recipes, and we were calling around all these barbecue places, and nobody would give us their recipe. It's like the top secret. So tell me what barbecue is hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
explain the process. Explain what the essence is.
It's a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of secrets to what we do. It's just, it's a long process. And
it's perfecting it.
Yeah, it's being able to perfect it and being able to keep it consistent is the hardest part of barbecue. But, I mean... really, it's just the wood you go with. Like, we use straight hickory. You know, you can use some different fruit woods to get different tastes into the meat, but it's just a matter of keeping a constant temperature and keeping your fire going and pulling the meat off when it's done.
It's practice. I mean, don't be afraid to fail is what I always tell people. Find out what works best for you. Find out, you know, I can tell you what's in our dry rub, and I will tell you. I won't tell you how much, because I want you to, like, find what works for you. You know, I could tell you, yeah, there's salt, there's paprika, there's chili powder, but you might not like things as spicy as I would. So I'll tell you, you know, what's in it, and then it's up to you from there to go and figure out how you like it and make it your own. I know I remember the first brisket I ever cooked. And I was living in Atlanta, and part of the thing was I was like, you know, I asked my roommate at the time, I'm like, where do you go eat barbecue? He took me to this place. It's real popular in Atlanta. And I was like, geez, this is it? This is what, you know, I'm in the South. This is barbecue. And so I missed that taste of Texas barbecue that I grew up with. And so that's kind of around the time that I started thinking about, you know, I'm gonna take this on. And so I come home and I go to the grocery store. I pick up this little tiny brisket. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna cook this thing, and it's gonna be great. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
and I cooked it on a little charcoal grill. I made, you know, put a fire in the corner and kind of made an offset, you know, smoker out of it. And that thing was like a hockey puck. I mean, it was it was horrible. And I mean, it just bowed up. It was tight. It was overcooked. It was dry. It was everything that you don't want a brisket to be. So
that's when you order pizza for dinner.
So it's I took that experience and just kept going. I didn't let it defeat me. I was like, I'm gonna do this. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I do is I see things and I know how I want them to be. I know how I want the end result to be, and I'll just stay on it until I achieve that. Mm-hmm. And so. You know.
Had you looked at a book? Did you?
I did all kinds.
Before you cooked the first brisket.
You know, you kind of jump online or look, read around, and try to find some. You know, like you said, you know, you call around, and nobody really gives you the exact. You know, the exact. You know, I'm sure I'm missing something. You know, and you probably are, but you know, you get to a point where you just get familiar with it, and then you just jump in and.
So I'm curious. Was it because you had too high a heat on that brisket and cooked it too fast?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I mean, we cook our briskets now for about, you know, 12, 13 hours, and granted, they're probably 13 to 15 pound briskets. This was probably a 2 to 3 pound brisket. And I think I cooked it in about 2 to 3 hours. So I learned fire management. You know, buying the right cut of meat. What grill I'm going to cook on.
Well, I was going to say, the equipment's got to play.
Oh, I used all kinds of different, all through the evolution. I mean, I cooked on, I started off on the little, you know, four-legged grocery store. No, it was a $10 grocery store grill that, you know, as cheap as can be. And then I moved to, a buddy gave me this what I call a R2-D2 smoker, but it was electric, and it just, you plug it in, it had a heating element, and you add wood chunks to it, and I kind of learned to do that, and I remember why I moved on from it, because
it was raining
one day, and I got electrocuted while I was taking the lid off, so I was like, well, enough of that, and so I was pretty much getting in, you know, full time with it, and so I kind of evolved with my smoker, so it took off from there.
So do you guys have a your own smoker? Did you a smoker?
We don't have our own type of smoker, but we do have a fleet of smokers at the restaurant.
How many are in a fleet?
Let's see, we have 5 commercial rotisserie smokers that are in use daily. I think we can cook about, we're right around 3,000 pounds of meat at one time.
And they're running 24/7.
They're running, 24 hours a day.
Whoa, wait a minute. We're going to take a break. We're coming back. 3,000 pounds of meat at one time. We'll take a break.
Welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story, and today Jonathan and Justin Fox, the pitmasters from Fox Barbecue in Atlanta, are with me today, and they just told me an incredible statistic that at any one time they've got 3,000 pounds of meat cooking
at one time.
You go through it. So how many people do you feed a day?
It varies from, you know, typical weekends. We're probably Saturday, Sunday are our busiest days, obviously, and I mean, we'll probably do anywhere between 900 to 1,200 people a day, just in-house. And
we Saturdays, I think we average around 1,500 people a day,
and then we do catering as well. Yeah.
So they each get about a half a pound of meat each.
Yeah, 8 ounces or so.
Okay, so now we're going to go through the process. I'm intrigued. So. Now, Texas barbecue is beef, correct?
So
do you?
But
do
we are in the South, so we do pork.
Okay.
When we first opened up the restaurant in 2007, you know, being in Atlanta, pork was our big seller. But now, you know, I think
Texas barbecue. I don't want to call it a trend, but Texas barbecue is kind of hot right now. So brisket is really popular. And so now I think we sell probably brisket and pork are right about on par.
Well, no, we sell more brisket definitely now than we do pork. I mean, pork was our number one seller, but it's been cool because now in Atlanta, you know, it's kind of a transplant city. And so you get a hodgepodge of you know, people from here, people from there. And you know, it's, so people are starting to embrace brisket. And when it's our number one seller now, I think that speaks.
All right. What is brisket?
It's, I mean, it's cut. It's a tough cut. It's up in the front chest. Front area. And so...
Of the cow.
Of the cow.
Of the cow.
It takes a lot of time for everything to break down in it. And once that...
So what does that do, taking a tough piece of meat? Why do you have to have a tough piece of meat to make great barbecue?
It's usually got more, you know, fat and connective tissue. And when you slow cook it for long periods of time, it's usually going to make it a lot more tender.
Because it melts the fat.
It melts through,
and you get that lip smacking.
And especially with brisket, you have two different muscle groups that are meeting up, and you have to, part of knowing a brisket is knowing how to slice it, and it's just because you start off slicing it one way, when you get halfway through it, you have to slice it a completely different way.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Because it's the way the one muscles group, run.
Yeah, one runs north and south. The other one runs. I mean, exactly. Towards it runs east and west.
All right. So, do you have a special type of cow or cat steer? You
we use a certified Angus beef brisket.
We you know, I, obviously since we cook so much, we buy so much. We have a good buying power. So none of our meat's frozen. We have specs on product, like our pork is, it's never frozen and it has to be within a 2-week pack date. So it's not sitting around somewhere. We're sizing up our briskets to make sure that we don't get a lot of, different sizes. So everything, that's the thing about consistency. It starts with a quality product. So when you have everything up to a certain spec, then you're not off on cooking times.
You're doing 18, 20-pound briskets?
Probably around 15-pound briskets.
15-pound.
Yeah.
So how many briskets a day do you go through?
We cook twice a day. We'll load the smoker about 5 o'clock smoking over hickory for our lunch the next day. We have guys that come in at 5 in the morning, and they'll start pulling that stuff off, and then they're reloading briskets that we will serve at dinner. So we're going through quite a bit of brisket, but the thing is we want to make sure that, you know, when you come in at dinner, you're getting fresh stuff. When you come in at lunch, you're getting fresh stuff. You know, we never reheat anything. We just find if we have leftover stuff, then we find other ways to use it. And so we're always cooking. That's why our smokers are always going.
I think right now we're going through pork and brisket both. We're probably going through about 5 tons a week.
So I'm just thinking, how many animals? You know, like how many cows and who buys the rest of the cow? You know?
Yeah, I know.
But I'm sure, you know, all the steaks and things. So do you deal directly with a ranch, or do you have a distributor?
They set up the connection. Since we're getting a certified Angus beef, so it's a better quality.
Wait, let's stop there. I mean, I remember going to a steakhouse and seeing a certified Angus steak, and I had never seen that before. Maybe that was 10 or 15 years ago. Now I go into every supermarket, it's certified Angus. What is this, a Scottish cow, Angus? I mean, what is it, a breed? Is it one specific breed? Can you enlighten me about Angus?
I mean, it's just a better quality. I think you don't want to get, like, just run-of-mill and I think it's the old adage, you get what you pay for.
No, but is it a certain type of cattle?
You know,
I don't really know too much about it. I know that we try to buy the best. Like, you know, we were getting a certified Angus, like from Creekstone, and then their plant, and it was all natural. You know, it was raised well, and then they had a plant fire, and so they haven't been able to fulfill like as many orders as they used to. And I know like Aaron Franklin and Austin, you know, he's pretty much buying up all of Creekstone's briskets, and we'd probably be close second if we could. But you know, it's just it's a better product. We tried a lot of brisket, and that's just what we want to make sure that the people get the best brisket possible.
Right, it's in the taste. So I was talking to a famous chef the other day, who will go nameless, but he's working on a concept around meat, and he said, you know, there's a problem with meat. You put it in your mouth, and after the first three chews, you've got all the stringy texture. It would be like, you know, and it has no flavor, no taste. I don't get, you know, he says, I love meat, but only for my first three chews. And I had never thought about that. What do you think of barbecue? Do you have, what do you think of that A statement, and B, I think barbecue maybe has something on an ordinary steak in that regard.
You know, I think when it comes to something like brisket, especially with the beef aspect, you know, especially on the back end of the brisket, which is commonly referred to as the fatty cut, because that's where all the connective tissue and the fat runs through the meat. So when you cook it slow and low, all that connective tissue and fat just melts and bastes through the meat. And I mean, it's almost, I call it meat butter, because I mean, when you take a bite of it, it pretty much almost just melts in your mouth. So I mean, you know, something like that, you take a bite and you're chewing it once, twice, three times, you're reaching for your next bite. So it's just like a continuous cycle.
Mm. You know, maybe take smaller bites.
Okay, so we've got the meat. We've got now the grill. How has your grill evolved, your smoker?
Well, like I said, you know, I kind of evolved from the electric smoker to somebody let me borrow you know, one of those trailer smokers. They call it offset smoker, where the firebox is off of the main chamber. And that was like, oh, I got to get one of these. And so it took a couple years, but I eventually got one.
And did it make a difference?
Oh, yeah. Now you're cooking with, like, you know, I had a wood guy. You know, this is at my house, too. This is before we opened the restaurant. So I have a wood guy to bring me wood. I have, you know, I'm going and buying, you know, bulk cases of meat. And I'm really starting to get into doing barbecue.
Are you
full
still
time.
Doing the website, web design?
I was still
time?
Doing, oh yeah, oh yeah. Okay. I pretty much, how you know, it evolved was, you know, we'd have these parties in our backyard. And it's kind of how the name of our restaurant came out of that. Since we're twins and they can't get our name straight, they just call us the Fox Brothers. So we had these parties in our backyard where it was like all you can eat, all you can drink, and we had bands play. And the first year, I think we had 50 people play or 50 people show up. And you know, we made an annual event. 2 years, 3 years down the road, we were having 200 people in our backyard. A lot of work, and it was just us two, and we were doing all the cooking. And so I was like, you know, if I can do this, then, you know, and people are enjoying the barbecue, then, you know, I can pretty much cater, you know, do catering events. So I had a full-time job. The catering took off. I was even catering my work, like my team. Lunches, so I'm getting paid on top of getting paid. But I was literally like getting to work and then say running to Costco and buying a bunch of meat at lunch and then running home real quick and rubbing all the meat down and firing up the smoker and packing a bunch of wood on there and then going back to work and then trying to cut out a little early so I can go back and put some more wood on the smoker and hope that nothing burned down. It was a couple of years.
So you mentioned rub.
Uh-huh.
When did you start on that first little brisket? Did you put a rub?
You know, I kind of tinkered around with reading recipes online and put some stuff together. I mean, you know, just getting in the kitchen and doing trial and error and finding out, like I said, what works for you. I kind of just came up with a rub, and it's just salt, pepper, garlic powder, onion powder, paprika, chili powder, and a little chipotle powder, and it worked. And I mean, it's still the rub that we have today, and we use at our store, and it's in grocery stores around the Southeast. And
so you don't do ribs or?
Oh, we do
pork
ribs.
Yeah,
yeah, spare ribs.
But just from the cow. The
we do beef short ribs.
We do a beef short rib, yeah.
Okay.
The big.
And
the,
do you use the same rub?
Okay. We use salt and pepper. Like on our briskets and anything beef, we do salt and pepper, which is kind of a traditional Texas thing. But sometimes a good quality beef just needs nothing more than salt and pepper.
Mm. So you're in the backyard. You got 200 people. Where were you in this?
I think that particular party. I think both right in the middle of the party. You know, we're living in a small house, and it was one of those situations where somebody comes up and like, "Hey, your toilet's broken," and so sitting there plunging the toilet in the middle of the party. And then they're like, "Oh, your brother's toilet's broken."
It was
too.
Good. It was good. It was good.
It prepped you for owning a restaurant.
Front of house experiences.
How to fix things on the fly.
Yes.
You know, we were both cooking and getting set up for the party, and you know, for something like that, when you have that many people coming over, you know, you start prepping on Thursday and you know cooking Friday and Saturday, and then everybody comes over Sunday afternoon, and
you have a small kitchen, and everybody's standing there, like I'm sitting there slicing, you know, brisket and cutting ribs and doing all the stuff, and people are just standing around. It's like, you know, I could get done quicker if you just get out of my way. Let me do this.
And they're like, "Oh, let me pick at that meat a little bit," and we're like, "No, just go away, go away."
How many years did you do those parties?
We did them for 4 years, I believe.
Four or 5 years?
Yeah, 2001 to 2005, I think, and that's about the time.
That's how Fox Brothers Barbecue kind of got its start.
That's about that time we met our business partners, the Nolan family. They own a bar in Midtown Atlanta called Smith's Old Bar, which is a bar and live music venue, and we went up there on a Wednesday night, and Bo, he's the son of the owner, had heard about the pulled pork, and you know, he asked us one time to bring some pork with him next time we came up there. So we did, and we had this annual meeting of friends at the bar every Wednesday, and a pork butt. So we'd bring up one pork butt, and you know, sold out that night. And he was like, "All right, next week bring two or three." So we did, and that wound up, we had our own menu there. It was Wednesday night, and then it was during football season in the South. It was Wednesday night and the weekends. And then that turned into 7 days a week with our own menu there. And basically, I mean, we were just cooking at the house, portioning it out and vacuum sealing it. And, you know, they would reheat it in their microwave and plate it. And it was called the second best barbecue in Atlanta at that point. So.
Whoa.
Yeah, the AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, kind of gave us the nod as like the second best barbecue in Atlanta. And we're sitting there cooking it out of our house. And you know, I'm driving it up to Smith's every day. And I was, at the time, I was still working. And it wasn't after a couple of years at Smith's that you know, I got laid off. And when I got my notice, they were like, "Well, we have a couple more months of project work if you actually want to stay on." I was like, I'm good. I think I can focus on one thing now. So that was the last time I had a corporate job.
Ah, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and hear about the birth of the restaurant. Well, Welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story, and today I'm interviewing Jonathan and Justin Fox of Fox Brothers Barbecue in Atlanta. So, had you been, like, in the last couple of years of your backyard parties talking about the restaurant?
You know, we started talking with our business partners now, the owners of Smith's, and they were like, you know, hey, you know, we want to jump in with you and help you get this going. And we served at the bar for a couple of years and kind of built up a following, had, you know, several reviews and starting to get a lot of media coverage. And so one day we just, I got a phone call and it was like, come look at this spot. It was a Friday, and I think Sunday morning we drove over and looked at it and we signed a lease on it on the next morning. And so Then it was kind of gung ho from there. And, you know,
was it a working restaurant before?
It had been closed for a couple months. And I think, it was just one of those things that our business partner, he used to drive by it every day and he always looked at it and he always thought, man, that would be a good spot for a restaurant, but it's somebody's got it.
Then a for-rent sign went up.
Yeah. And he was driving past it one day and it had a for-rent sign hanging on this big old green ugly fence that was surrounding the property, and he called it, and we literally went down and looked at it on Sunday and signed the lease on Monday, and it's not quite that easy anymore. But
now, wait. So this guy is your business partner, but you were signing the lease.
Well, we all signed it together. The lease. Yeah. We formed a business and everything. You know, we're all in it together. So
did you do the website?
I did. Now we have a PR company that I passed the torch.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you know, it's like we didn't really have any experience. I mean, Justin, you know, he waited tables for years, and so he had a lot of front of house experience, and you know, we got some recognition from the press. We had a following. You know, people were talking about us, and so I was like, you know, we're going to go in. We're going to open this restaurant. And we're going to kill it. We're going to retire. And not like that at all. You know,
So tell, there's so many people who do parties at their house. And they go, hey, look, I can feed 200 people. I can open a restaurant. What is the difference?
Well, obviously, you get in there and you realize quickly that while you thought everybody knew who you were and knew what you had, not the case. You know, people were coming in saying, you need to cook your stuff like this. Where's all of the, you know, this is the South. Where are all your sauces? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it was like, man, I got to work really hard at this, you know. And consistency, you know, is the main thing of any restaurant. You know, finding people that care as much as you do about your product. I didn't even have recipes. I just knew how to make everything.
Oh my.
And so I had to sit down and, like, teach these people how to make my food and hope that they get it right. And then, you know, then I sat down and really started working on recipes and honing thing in. And, you know, it was like starting over. You know, nobody wants to, you know, subpar meal. You know, you're not going to be in business long doing that. So, I have a certain way that I see things and how I want things to be. And so I had to go back to work and figure all that out.
What was the hardest part of your learning curve in the restaurant business?
I think it's just the day-to-day surprises that you get. You know, I think...
Give me some examples. Let's share the pain.
Well, I think the first Saturday that we were open, I think we were just getting ready for dinner service. And, you know, it was... I think it was... Might have been around Labor Day weekend. Saturday night, Labor Day weekend. And beautiful night. You know, we're just getting rolling, and we hear this loud boom outside the restaurant, and our transformer had just blown up, and so we didn't have any power, we didn't have any computer systems, we didn't have anything, but, you know, luckily our kitchen was gas-powered, and we had meat all ready to go, and so we were like, all right, well, we're going to do this, so we just sat everybody outside, you know.
Got a boom box.
We got a little portable stereo for music, and, you know, and then people... the hardest part was, like, people, you know, when you sit somebody down and you tell them, we don't have power right now, and they're like, what do you mean you can't take my credit card? And I was like, well, we don't have electricity. So if you'd like to go get cash, we could take care of that. But
how many people did that?
It wasn't too crazy of a night, so we didn't have too
many. It was like a party because Georgia Power came out and everybody was sitting on the patio watching them replace the transformer. So it turned out to be a fun night. But, you know, again, we had a tree fall in our restaurant, you know, a couple of years ago. It was a Thursday night. No, luckily, it was 6:30 at night. There was just, it's pre-dinner. And this pre-random storm happened to hit. And I just got home, and I got a call from my manager saying, oh, my God, you got a tree just fell in the restaurant, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, are you kidding me? Or is this a joke? And then one of my main managers calls, like, did you just get a call about... I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, I'm on my way up there. And I was like, if this is a joke, I'm calling all the owners right now. So they're all going to be in on it. So, and literally, this 100-year-old tree fell and took out about 80% of our dining room. And, luckily this lady saw it happening, and she got up and screamed, and everybody ran out. And we just jumped in and got it cleared up. We were closed the next day.
And we only closed for 30 hours.
And we reopened back on Saturday morning.
Wow. Yeah. Did you have roofers?
Well, we kind of made do for the weekend, and then we had this large tent come out. And
that's in the spirit.
Yeah. Called it revival dining. I mean, it's Atlanta. It's resurgence.
So what do you like to drink with your barbecue?
Probably cold beer. I like Shiner, being from Texas.
Can never go wrong with a good glass of bourbon.
Yeah.
A glass of bourbon?
Yeah.
Just straight or?
Hey, it depends on the mood. Yeah. Depends on what
bourbon,
point.
Bourbon? I don't think I've ever done that. Bourbon and brisket.
Smoking and smoking.
Oh, yeah.
Smoking and smoking. What do you serve as sides?
We have, kind of the run of southern sides. Mac and cheese, collard greens, it's like we get into it, I was like things like ham hocks, we're a barbecue restaurant and we're buying frozen ham hocks from this company. I was like, we can make our own. I mean, that's what we do. So,
I think one of the sides that we've kind of embraced lately is the good old standby of the Frito pie.
Frito pie
is basically it's kind of a taste of our childhood growing up in Texas. When we played Little League, you get a little after your game was over, they'd give you a little coin to go up and buy something at a concession stand, so you could sit there and watch the other games for the afternoon. And growing up in Texas, it was all about Frito pie. So you just walk up and basically they'd get a bag of Fritos, cut the top off, and ladle in a little chili and some cheese and onions, and give it to you in the bag, and you could just go sit there and go sit on the bleachers and eat your Frito pie and watch baseball.
Well, you just dropped that term like everybody knows it in the universe.
No,
am I the only person who doesn't know? This is the first time. It sounds awesome.
Well, everybody sounds surprised there. When we talk about Frito pie, but I'm like, well, Fritos makes chili cheese Fritos for a reason, and it's basically what it is it's just Fritos with chili.
It was about probably a year after we opened, and I think it was the winter time, and I was like, we're gonna do a Frito pie, and everybody was like, what, you're gonna do what, huh? I've never heard of such a thing. And so we ran it for good couple of months, and it took off, and I think we get just as much press on our Frito pie as we do our barbecue.
You know what? This is the most exciting dish I've heard. I've been interviewing all kinds of chefs.
last year at this time, we did a lunch at the Beard House. And since, Frito pie is what we're known for, we're like, well, we want to take the food that we do and kind of refine it a little bit. So we're like, we're going to do a Frito pie croquette. And so we made our own Frito dough out of masa, And it took a bunch of trial and error. It was like masa and just a shitload of lard. And and so then we took our brisket chili and added gelatin to it so it could, you know, you're going to fry it. So we froze it, balled it up.
Wait, I don't understand. You took brisket
chili.
Brisket chili. What's the gelatin?
Well,
let's say gelatin, so you thicken up the chili. Basically,
so like Knox gelatin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, you could just like scoop out the chili and make balls out of it.
So these are
then
like
you freeze
shots,
them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chili.
Yeah.
So
it's a gelatin.
So we made a ball like a croquette.
Yeah.
Out of the masa dough with the chili on the inside,
uh-huh.
and then you fry it, and it, I mean it's just pop it in your mouth, and it's like a. Oh, it was, and we served. It was a past apt for our dinner, and we like lined the plate with Frito bags, and it was
a lot of fun. Next year, I hope you. So when's the big the barbecue?
The Big Apple Barbecue Fest is this Saturday and Sunday in Madison Square Park. It's always a great time.
How many years have you been doing it?
This is, we haven't cooked at it, but we've been coming up here for 4 years now. A lot of we've gotten to know a lot of people in the barbecue industry, and uh-huh. a lot of our friends are cooking at it. So it's
we help them out. And
yeah.
It's like a weird family reunion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody, it's kind of a big fun event for the industry. Everybody comes up and gets to come up to the city and hang out and do stuff and you know,
drink beers, drink bourbon, and tell lies and just have fun. You know, just tell stories and
so
have fun.
So, what time does it go from like 11 in the morning?
I think it goes 11 to 6 or something like that. And
it's just crazy. You're cooking barbecue
in Midtown Manhattan. You know, on what is it, Madison? And they shut down the street, and there's just lines of people, you know, just waiting for barbecue.
Try to come by. Big lines, huh?
Big lines, but it's worth it. There's
worth it.
Probably some of the best barbecue in the country is being served up in the park this weekend. So,
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, can you believe we've gone through the time?
No, it just started.
We've gone over time. And I didn't even, I still didn't even get to the pork.
No, well,
but,
yeah.
You know, we... You guys from Texas, you got to start with beef. So I can't thank you enough
for coming up here.
Yeah. And this is the first time you're cooking outside in New York City this weekend.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
Thank you. And I want to do a shout out to Jack Innes and Robin Cohen, my producers. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.